Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, one of the world's toughest sailing events starts Sunday with two Irish competitors, and on board a century-old wooden ship delivering cargo to our offshore islands. La Solitaire du Figaro has been described as the hardest sailing race in the world. It's a solo offshore event with four legs this year over 1,830 miles, and it's one of the biggest events on the French sporting calendar. It starts Sunday with 35 sailors on the start line, two of them are Irish. One, Tom Dolan, is a veteran of the race. He's no stranger to seascapes and he would hope to be among the leaders. But the second, Kenneth Rummel, while he's a hugely experienced offshore sailor, is in the rookie class. He's a first-timer. I spoke to him earlier today from his boat in France. He told me how he's feeling.
Yeah, I suppose we've done as much as one can do in preparation. So the boat's ready, it's on the dock, and we're just checking over it every day. We're just complying with, you know, all of the requirements of the race. And then once we've ticked off those jobs, I suppose for me, it's just about relaxing, looking over the weather, getting a little bit of exercise in, trying to build up as much of a sleep bank as possible. So overall, we're feeling that we're as prepared as we can or we know to be. I'm relatively relaxed yet, you know, focusing on the race and thinking about it. And I'm in relatively constant consultation with one of the French weather guys to have a look at the routing ahead and the weather ahead and seeing what the first leg is really going to be like.
The first leg is a tough one. You're going from the north of France to the Fastnet and back again.
Yeah, indeed. So this is there's four stages in the race, and the first leg is the longest. They have three race course options, depending on a variety of factors, including the weather, also potential. If it was bad weather, they can alter the race course to take us away from both Ireland and England due to COVID restrictions, because if any boats had to, for technical reasons or whatever reason, had to retire and pull into Ireland or France, there's obviously COVID restrictions for those boats doing the next leg. So they have multiple race course options, but the initial one, or the favoured one, is from where we are in Bay de Saint-Braxing, Saint-Quay, and we're racing pretty much straight to the Fastnet and back. So it's approximately 640 nautical miles there and back. And the latest weather routing that we got last night indicates that should take us about 89 hours, which is just over 4 days. So that's what we're looking at the moment.
The first part, presume you get to the Fastnet, it'll be upwind most of the way, which is more difficult.
Look, we don't know, and in traditionally on the Fastnet race out of the UK into the Fastnet back, yeah, it usually is a beat there and a run home. It's looking like we're going to have quite a bit of southerly coming out of the channel and across the Celtic Sea. It looks like it's going to be southerly, and then it will eventually harden up and we will beat into the Fastnet. I think it's inevitable at some stage in the way there. There's going to be a beat, but fingers crossed it's not a beat the whole way, because the Figaro 3s are great boats. They're absolutely fantastic boats, but being, I suppose, typically French, the French don't like sailing upwind, so the mast is quite far back in the boat. It is quite a wide stern, and the boat doesn't like sailing upwind. If we achieve a 50-degree true wind angle upwind, we're doing well in a Figaro 3.
And on a normal boat, you'd expect better than 45 degrees.
Oh yeah, on a normal boat, on a typical IRC racer like a J109, you know, those boats would be getting 38 true wind angle upwind. So the Figaro 3 is a challenge to sail upwind, shall we say.
The weather here is appalling at the moment. What's it like, do you think, for the next couple of days?
The weather here has been, Ireland has been getting the centre of the systems as they've been coming through. We've been kind of getting the tail end of them here in France. So the weather here is better than Ireland. But according to the weather readings, we should get southerlies, but the weather is due to improve dramatically, I hope as well, over the next few days. So There's a front or two is going to come through. We're going to have a front as we come past Land's End, and then we're going to have another front midway across the Celtic Sea. And then the weather after that is due to kind of abate quite a bit for us. So, you know, we're expecting kind of 15 to 20 knots, those kind of wind directions. We're probably going to get a couple of hours of 25 to 30 knots during the race. But, you know, fingers crossed, it's 4 days, it's on your own. And the last thing we really need is a storm to be thrown in on top of that for us. Because the autopilots are great on the boat, and they're top of the range. But especially when the stronger winds come in, there's only so much the autopilot can do. So bad weather means less rest and more time on deck and more driving and less sleep. So the better the weather, obviously the opposite. So the better the weather, the more sleep we can get, the better decisions we can take. So I hope for everybody's sake that the weather is relatively calm.
You're a newcomer to this race, but your name, your family name, is one of the best known in Irish sailing. You're from the Irish National Sailing School.
Yeah, indeed.
It's the biggest sailing centre in the country.
Yeah. The school's big. So, I came back to Dad. Obviously, my father Alistair set it up in the 80s. I've always been involved since a very, very young age. And then I suppose it was 12 years ago, I gave up a solid accountancy career in an inverted commas normal life to pursue a career in the marine industry, both teaching and passing on my skills, but also developing as a professional sailor, both in dinghies and offshore and big boats. What a great thing about the school is the school has grown, and we are who we are. But I've a fantastic team behind me in the school, which means that I can leave the school for extended periods of time to pursue these achievements of doing races like the Solitaire last year and the last number of years, numerous Fastnets and Middle Seas and Sydney Hobart. So it's a very fortunate situation to be in, and I couldn't do without the team behind me.
Taking up solo racing or getting involved in this race this year is a bit of a surprise for you, because you were meant to do a two-handed with Pamela Lee.
Yeah, exactly. It was all a bit of a surprise. It certainly wasn't in the plan, but I think given obviously the global pandemic with COVID, it just became a natural fit quite quickly. So yeah, we were supposed to do a double-handed campaign with our goal being to represent Ireland at the double-handed offshore worlds in Malta. So Joan Malloy was a key person as well. It was originally supposed to be Joan and myself, but then Joan got the fantastic news that she's due quite soon with her first child. So and she wouldn't be able to compete in Malta. So you know, the hunt went for a suitable co-skipper, and Pamela Lee jumped in straight away, and we did a week's training in France in early February in the Figaro with Joan, Pam and myself. And we also, that's where I met Marcus Hutchinson, who I'm chartering the boat from. And a lot of Irish sailors will know Marcus. He's been fantastic in you know, introducing us to the scene. And I suppose, you know, when COVID came in and the restrictions, and we were looking at the season ahead and the double-handed worlds got cancelled. And I suppose I was looking for ways to become a better short-handed offshore sailor. And it was like I was peering over the side of a cliff, and Marcus kind of just gave me a friendly nudge. Between himself and Pam and Joan, they gave me a nudge, and I plunged headfirst into this solo offshore racing in France, which is the toughest offshore solo scene in the world.
You mentioned earlier trying to bank up sleep before you go on the race. Lack of sleep is one of the most difficult things for solo racing.
Yeah, it is. And there's a real catch-22 because you want to sleep to make good decisions. Yet anytime you do sleep, you're not looking at your competitors. You're not looking at boat speed. And, you know, you have to at some stage take your eye slightly off the ball. So in the sleeping side of things, we would sleep or nap, I suppose, is a better description, for 10, maybe 15 minutes at a time. After 10 or 15 minutes, when you wake up or the alarm goes off, you can you still know and you're cognizant of where you are and where you're going. Problem is, if you sleep for much longer than that, maybe even 20, 30 minutes, and you fall into a deep sleep, when you wake up, it can take you 2 or 3 minutes to remind yourself of where everything is. So the important thing is to nap when we can, set the autopilot up, make sure the boat is happy, check the AIS that there's no impending boats, be it ships or competitors that we may or may not get in the way of, and then put your head down for 10 minutes and wake up and check it all again. And if all is good, you might get another 10 minutes, but 9 times out of 10, you've got to clear weed or adjust the sails or check the nav, or, you know, there's so much to do the whole time.
There are 35 boats on the start on Sunday?
35, yeah. So it's one of the biggest solitaire fleets in recent years. And, of course, the second solitaire edition with the new Beneteau Figaro 3.
Another Irish competitor is Tom Dolan.
Yeah, no, Tom is there. Tom's been fantastic. I must say, although we're competitors, you know, coming in as a rookie, especially in my first year, and probably one of the older rookies, if not the oldest rookie, you know, all the skippers have been where I am before, so they know that there's a lot of uncertainty and questions. So Tom, Joan, the Irish sailors have gone before me, David Kennefic as well, they've all been in touch and offered their assistance wherever possible, and saying that it's so of the other competitors here, everybody, you know, the guys from the UK and French guys have all been more than welcoming and more than accommodating. So it's a fantastic family to be inside at the same time.
You have 4 legs in total. How long, a little break between each one, how long will the whole race take?
So the first leg, as I said, to the fastness, 640 miles. That should take about 4 days. Then we get in and we've got 3 nights ashore. And when we hit the dock, I can't deviate away from how important it is to have a solid preparator or somebody to help you. This is a race you cannot do on your own. You can sail on your own, but when you come into the dock, you need to sleep. You need somebody to pick up the pieces on the boat and pick up the pieces of the skipper. So Pam, because we couldn't do the double-handed stuff, Pam is acting as my preparator.
That's Pam Lee. Your shore crew.
She's the shore crew. So when I get in, you know, I basically quite literally hit the dock and I am pushed in the direction of a bed, and Pam will look after the boat and put the boat away and prepare a meal or, you know, booked a restaurant or something like that. So I get 3 days ashore, which is just pure sleep. The boat won't go out. Pam will do whatever maintenance needs to be done on the boat. Then the next leg takes us from Bay de St. Brac out towards Wolf Rock, out around Wolf Rock off Land's End, and then back up to Dunkirk. So that should be approximately 540 miles. And then similarly in Dunkirk, we're there for 3 days, so 3 nights to get 3 nights of sleep. And then back on the boat, and we go from Dunkirk, pretty much just hugging the French coastline, down to Saint-Nazaire. And once we get to Saint-Nazaire, and that leg should take another about 530, 540 miles. So another, you know, 3.5, probably 4 days at sea. And then in Saint-Nazaire, we get 2-3 nights of sleep. And then we just have to do 1 final leg of approximately 170, 180 miles. Which, going well, should only take 24 hours. So the last leg is a nice, small leg, just up and down the French coast, which will be lovely. And then we get into Saint-Nazaire, and I can tell you, I'm looking forward to crossing that finish line in Saint-Nazaire for the last time for the solitaire, and having completed the course. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of skippers. And, you know, for them, even just completing the course, those guys that have done 6 or 7 times, the sole aim for those guys is not a result, it's to complete the course, because it is incredibly tough.
And the best of luck to Kenny Rumble and to Tom Dolan when they start on Sunday. You can follow the progress of the race on the Figaro website. It's a windy Sunday morning in Baltimore Harbour in County Cork, and the country's newest tall ship, albeit a small tall ship, is on the dockside taking on board cargo. The Ketch, the AK Island, was rescued and rebuilt over a 20-year period and was relaunched 2 years ago. For their latest project, they're going to deliver cargo around the coast of Ireland. Gary McMahon is the director of the Island Project.
Yeah, she was designed and built as a cargo vessel and she served 70 years.
What kind of year have you had? We've been in lockdown, of course.
Experienced the restrictions on travel. So, yes, it's been a slow year, so we're only getting going now. We just had our haul out. But we've been going for 12 years, so...
What cargo are you carrying? I see West Cork, Garnish Island, gin...
Yeah, we have some local distillers.
Groovy cheese, yeah.
And then we're picking up further other cargoes as we go.
You're going to go as far as the Iron Islands? That was the original plan?
That's it, but things are very unsettled and broken, so... We're doing this culturally as opposed to commercially.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore,
where is she going to spend the winter then? Where is going to be her home port from now on?
Well, she moves around and she's going to Dublin. So we don't know where we'll winter yet. But,
James Lyons is the co-founder of the charity Sailing Into Wellness. He's the skipper for today's trip heading west. You're off today. Bit of a bumpy trip ahead of you?
We do, yeah. Yeah, there's a bit of a sea there. I mean, the wind has been blowing hard for about 4 days. So it's moderating all today. So a bit of a bumpy ride, but we're heading west to Kilrush or Kilrona on our agenda, depending on how good the weather is.
Okay, you might jump all the way to the Iron Islands.
It's maybe looking less likely with the weather, but it's plan A, but plan B and the more realistic one is probably Kilrush.
Yeah, what is it going to be like going out around Dingle, Skellig's?
Yeah, well, actually the wind is going to drop, so we'll have it on the nose to start with, so a little bit slow after we get around maybe Dersey, and then we should have some good sailing conditions, and it gets a little light tonight, which would be great, and we're dying to get the sails up on the island and to get her sailing again. It's been a while.
Yeah, she's been locked down for the year, really.
Yeah, essentially she has. Yeah, this is the first real voyage this year, and we're in the end of August, so got some salt water flowing over the decks.
Jim McInerney is my name.
I last met you here on this boat maybe 2 years ago.
It would be two years.
You were still fitting her out with all.
We still have more to do. You know, we're 90% there, I think, at this stage, with some changes and adjustments down below decks.
Yeah. The amount of work you put in to refurbish this boat, it was 20 years.
Yeah, well, I started 10 years ago on the Island Project. So, it's, you know, we started, myself and Frank, again, to build the deck up.
Yeah.
From there, then we just get at it really, and we're still at it, I suppose.
Now you've been at sea for 2 years, how has everything held up?
Maybe it's held fairly well, you know, there's no major problems. Well, a few adjustments and a few things to be tightened, but generally it's worked very well.
Yeah, all these, this is all teak?
Yes, well, these runners are teak. Because they're exposed so much.
We won't even get to drink them, that's more infected with here.
But pitch pine is generally the timber we've used on the deck house.
It's very, very specialised work, because if you bent runners here.
Yes, yeah, they're laminated, epoxy laminated, you know, to get the corks on them. But generally, it's mostly straight stuff, you know.
Yeah.
As you can see.
You must be happy to be out there again today after Fox April or May.
I'm not a sailor.
No, fairly rough. I have to break it to you.
I've heard. Yeah, but look, onwards and upwards.
How did you get into building boats and working on this boat when you're not a sailor?
Well, I met Gary at a funeral, and he called me over and said, "You come up and have a look at our workshop and see what we're at." I went up and I'm still there. But all my family, on my father's side, were both there.
Okay, but has voluntary work for you?
It is.
Yeah.
I've got in Limerick docks from my own father, then built trawlers and lobster boats up in Killaloo.
Okay.
So there's still a history of the family, but I never got a chance to work with boats.
But you're about to head off to Kilrush, 24 hours at sea ahead of you. Would that be your first overnight?
No, when we brought her down there 2 years ago, I came down from Limerick on her. So I haven't really been anywhere on her since, until now.
Well, look, the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As the island set off on its first windy trip of the year, I met Niamh Driscoll of Cape Clear Distilleries.
Just after coming out from Cape Clear this morning on the Cape Clear ferry to hand over precious cargo here to the island. They're taking cases of our gin with them on their voyage heading off the coast.
I see one or two boxes went down there with people's names and phone numbers on them, individual orders.
Indeed, these are one of our new range of engraved bottles. So these are specially engraved for this particular voyage, and orders have been coming in hot and heavy.
And you can follow the progress of the island as she makes her way around the country on their website, island.ie. And lockdown permitting, I hope to join them for one of the legs for the programme. Unfortunately, we've had a number of drowning tragedies in recent weeks, and our thoughts are with all of the families involved. During various search and rescue attempts, the Irish Naval Service has played a key role, providing expertise, personnel and equipment. As the service approaches its centenary, a regular contributor, Hugh Oram, has some of their history.
The Irish Naval Service is one of the three components of the state's defence forces, and with something like 1,000 serving personnel, it has long made a major contribution to maintaining and preserving Ireland's naval and maritime heritage. After the Anglo-Irish Treaty was signed very nearly a century ago, the new state was given responsibility for controlling fishing while the UK retained control over Irish waters. The first forerunner of the Irish Naval Service was created, but only lasted for a year. The new service had just one ship, the Murucu. As the Helga, it had been used by British forces to shell central Dublin during the 1916 Rising. And later on it was used by the Irish government for fisheries protection work. Then in 1938, the three treaty ports of Cork Harbour, Beerhaven and Lough Swilly were handed back to Ireland. During the Second World War, the Marine and Coast Watching Service had a useful array of close to a dozen craft. In June 1940, an Irish motor torpedo boat returned to Haulbowline after making two separate trips to rescue Allied soldiers from the beaches at Dunkirk. Immediately after the war, in 1946, the Marine Service was disbanded and replaced by the Naval Service. Three corvettes were bought from the UK and renamed the Cleona, the Maeve and the Macca. The longest lasting was the Maeve, which survived in service until 1972. At that stage, the Vrome Dockyard in Cork was building an offshore patrol ship, the L.E. Deirdre, which was the first purpose-built Irish naval vessel. Then, just over 20 years ago, a new vessel was delivered to the naval service, the L.E. Roisin, the first of a new class of naval patrol ships. These days, most Irish naval missions are in Irish waters, but on occasion they sail much further afield, either on United Nations missions or in support of Irish trade missions. And in 2006, the L.E. Ethna travelled as far as South America. In 2010, two new ships were planned, each with a range of 6,000 nautical miles. And in the past few years, Irish ships have been stationed in the Mediterranean as part of the response to a major migrant crisis. Today, the Naval Service is headed up by Commodore Michael Malone, who was appointed in 2018 and who is based at Haulbowline. But until 2014, all Naval Service vessels were given traditional female names, but the newer ships in the fleet today have since been given male names. Today, the Irish Naval Service has around 1,000 personnel, and the Navy now has to cover an area of around 480,000 square kilometres, a vast area of ocean. But for nearly a century now, Ireland's Naval Service has maintained a vast array of maritime functions, a great tribute to the efficiency of a comparatively modest naval service by European standards.
Hugh Oram. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme's podcast is on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact me or the programme, email is seascapes@rte.ie. We've had some really unseasonably bad weather, and the situation around some of our coasts can be quite dangerous. There are high waves and sea surges which are not usual for this time of the year. You need to be very careful if you're near any rocks, particularly on an incoming tide. If you're anywhere on or near the water over the next week, be safe.
And Seascapes is presented and produced by Fergal Keane.